This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Jim Bertel. As the coronavirus continues its march around the world, the numbers are sobering. More than 291,000 people are dead, while over 4.2 million people globally have been infected. The United States continues to be the country hardest hit, with Johns Hopkins University reporting the death toll topping 82,000. And the country's top infectious disease expert says that figure is almost certainly higher. Dr. Anthony Fauci testified at a U.S. Senate hearing Tuesday and said that unaccounted numbers of coronavirus victims in the New York City area have died at home without being officially counted in the national death toll. He also warned of serious consequences if cities and states reopen too quickly. U.S. President Donald Trump has been encouraging businesses and state governors to reopen. Around the world, several countries have begun easing measures to contain the new coronavirus, despite confronting upsurges and warnings of a second outbreak. India is resuming some train service for the first time since March, defying a surge that saw about 3,600 new cases this week. The Russian government is also starting to gradually lift lockdown measures as infections in the country exceed 232,000, second only to the U.S. In an effort to prevent the new cases of the coronavirus, Spain is requiring people arriving from abroad to go into quarantine for 2 weeks. China is instituting a similar strategy as it saw its locally transmitted cases sharply decline and authorities began easing lockdown restrictions. But Chinese authorities say they will test all 11 million people in the city of Wuhan. From Washington, this is VOA News. Governments around the world are currently weighing their coronavirus strategies and whether it is time to impose new measures to stop the spread of the virus or allow people to resume parts of normal life. The World Health Organization is advising nations to ensure that the pandemic is under control before reopening. India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi announced a massive package of more than $265 billion to revive by a seven-week lockdown enforced to contain the coronavirus pandemic. In other news, Israeli authorities say a Palestinian rock thrower killed an Israeli soldier in the occupied West Bank on Tuesday, and police wounded a Palestinian who tried to stab security staff at a checkpoint. The separate events marred a relative lull in West Bank violence during the coronavirus outbreak. Palestinians and Israelis have restricted their movements and, to a degree, cooperated on measures in response to the crisis. President Trump's years-long refusal to release his tax records is now in the hands of the U.S. Supreme Court. On Tuesday, justices weighed whether Congress and local prosecutors have the authority to investigate a sitting president. The justices heard oral arguments in two high-profile cases involving subpoenas for Mr. Trump's tax and other financial records issued by three House of Representatives committees and New York City's top prosecutor to Trump's accounting firm and banks. The president has refused to make his taxes public, but federal courts in New York and Washington ruled against him last year, prompting Mr. Trump's lawyers to appeal the decisions to the Supreme Court. There is another stunning development in the case. Former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, the federal judge overseeing the case, has put the Justice Department's move to drop the criminal charges against Flynn on hold to give outside legal experts a chance to argue against the department's decision. Afghan officials say the suicide bombing of a funeral in Eastern Province and a militant raid on a hospital in the capital, Kabul, have killed around 40 people and injured scores of others. A provincial government spokesman in Nangarhar says scores of people were present Tuesday morning at the funeral for an influential Afghan community police commander when a suicide bomber blew himself up. The Islamic State is claiming responsibility for the attack. Separately, a group of unknown gunmen stormed a government-run hospital in Kabul, killing at least 14 people and injuring 15 others. For more on the coronavirus, go to voanews.com. I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. East African community leaders propose measures to control the cross-border spread of COVID-19.
In the other side of the country or before crossing the border.
Zimbabwe's biggest mobile money transfer provider sues the government. Struggling sex workers in Botswana get food aid. Rice farmers in Ghana might benefit from COVID-19 pandemic. We'll examine the reasons behind the loosening of COVID-19 restrictions in Senegal, and thousands seek safety in Niger from violence in northwest Nigeria.
Those fleeing speak of extreme violence unleashed against civilians, murders, kidnappings for ransom, pillaging and looting of villages.
And an alleged corruption case against the former spokesperson of Zambia's president is dismissed. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. East African community leaders have proposed regional steps to control the cross-border spread of COVID-19. During a video summit on Tuesday, the leaders also examined the economic impact of the coronavirus. In attendance were the presidents of Kenya, Rwanda, South Sudan, and Uganda. The presidents of Burundi and Tanzania did not attend. Neville Mina, secretary for Tanzania's Editors Forum, says the East African community leaders agreed to devise a regional mechanism for testing and certificating cross-border truck drivers.
They have agreed to put some measures, but the major one is to have all the drivers, especially driving the trucks, get tested before entering
the other side of the country or before crossing the border.
But unfortunately, two presidents were not on the conference. This means they didn't participate. And this is Pierre Nkurunziza of Burundi. And the Tanzanian president, John Magufuli, was not there also. For Nkurunziza, maybe because we can't guess, because Burundi, they're about to have their general elections. For Tanzania, we never know, because of recent SADC head of states also convened the meeting also to respond on coronavirus pandemic, and the chairperson, who is our president Magufuli, was not there.
Why do you think they are focusing a lot on the truck drivers?
Truck drivers are always in motion, moving always from one country to another, crossing the borders. That is a part of their lives. And some of them, they have families in both sides of the countries, of the nations, of the member states. They interact with the business community. So it is very easy to have COVID-19 transmitted from this group of people.
Earlier this week, Zambia closed its border with Tanzania. Also, the former Kenyan Prime Minister Raila Odinga criticized President Magufuli for what Odinga called individualistic approach towards the fight against COVID-19. Has there been any reaction from President Magufuli or the government of Tanzania?
The government has not particularly responded to the action which was done by Zambian authority to cross the border. Even the criticism which was aired by a good friend of President Magufuli, Raila Odinga.
The ECA heads of state expressed concern about the impact of COVID-19 on the region's economy. It seems the economies of all ECA countries are being impacted negatively.
That's the open secret, that there's no way in the circumstances we have, where some of our neighbors like Kenya and Rwanda and Uganda have been, some of them 100% locked down, that the economy could have been in a smooth way as it used to be. This is an open secret that in any means, our economy in East Africa is going to somehow be impacted with the COVID-19.
What has been the impact of the Madagascar COVID-19 herbal treatment that we understand President Magufuli had ordered?
Yes, they say that they have brought the herbal medicine, and what they came with, it was not for consumption. That the government has not yet come to conclusion that they should give that medicine to the people affected by the COVID-19. Instead, they say that the medicine must undergo some medical research process.
Neville Mina is secretary for Tanzania's Editors Forum. You're speaking with us from the capital, Dar es Salaam. Zimbabwe's biggest mobile money transfer services provider has taken the country's central bank to court, challenging a directive to freeze the accounts of thousands of its agents. The central bank alleges they have fueled a currency black market. Ade Gondo has the story.
Ecocash now controls about 80 to 90% of Zimbabwe's mobile money market. The platform has helped millions of people conduct business as Zimbabwe's financial system struggled to recover after hyperinflation forced the government to abandon the domestic dollar more than a decade ago. The government and many customers grew angry last year when many of Ecocash's agents sharply raised their prices to more than 60% of the value of cash withdrawals, in many cases far above the official rates. Prices rose as Zimbabwe suffered an extreme shortage of cash. Ecocash disavowed the rate hikes as the actions of independent agents. Last September, the central bank suspended Ecocash agents' lines of cash over the increased fees, although it lifted the suspension a month later. Economic analyst Gift Mgano says what is lost in the current dispute is how the company was able to grow because the banks were crippled.
There was financial exclusion. The majority of the people were not in bank. You know, with opening a bank, it's a member that has bank accounts, a member that has, for a person who is not formally employed, for a person who has no house. So Ecocash, alongside other mobile payment platforms, came in with flexibility, which allowed the people to then to join in and even do savings.
The Minister of Finance has issued a directive compelling Ecocash to operate as a banking institution in a bid to supervise its operations. Mugano says the new regulations for mobile money transfer services might produce undesired effects, especially if Ecocash is expected to impose identification protocols for its millions of subscribers.
On that platform, so when he's including the Ecocash platform into the banking system, he is running the risk of chasing away people from using that platform, that's number one. Number two, it's also very complicated to implement, because one of the things which the bank must do is what is called the know your customer.
Zimbabwe's government is trying to phase out use of foreign currencies such as the US dollar and South African rand over the next few years and re-establish the Zimbabwe dollar. That has proven difficult because many people don't trust the local currency. The economy has been battered for several years by mismanagement, drought and inflation that has topped more than 300% a year. The World Food Program estimates nearly half the country faces hunger. Reporting for VOA, this is Ade Gondo.
The UN Refugee Agency says surging violence in parts of northwestern Nigeria has sent an estimated 23,000 people into neighboring Niger. More than 60,000 have traveled to Niger since an influx began 1 year ago. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Violence in Sokoto, Zamfara, and Katsina states in northwestern Nigeria has taken a dangerous new turn, forcing more people to flee for safety in 1 month than during the course of most of last year. The UN Refugee Agency says people are being attacked and killed by groups of armed men, including herders and farmers fighting over resources, bandits attempting to steal property, and vigilantes carrying out revenge attacks. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balach says dozens of civilians have been killed during attacks on villages and local government areas. He says most of the refugees are desperate, destitute women and children.
Those fleeing speak of extreme violence unleashed against civilians, murders, kidnappings for ransom, pillaging and looting of villages. Refugees from Nigeria are being allowed to seek protection in Niger despite the border closure measures due COVID-19.
The UNHCR says it fears armed incursions inside Nigeria could spill over into Niger. Balach tells VOA insecurity along the border makes it riskier for aid agencies to take care of newly arriving refugees.
One of our main concerns with access and remoteness is closeness of the area where these refugees have arrived to the border. So our work is going on with authorities that we are able to move them further inland so they are protected from any further incursions or any other attacks that the armed groups may have had.
Bullard says some 7,000 refugees are in the process of being moved to safer locations where they can get water, food, shelter, and other essential aid. He says fewer refugees in the border areas will ease some of the pressure on impoverished local communities that have been hosting them. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 13th. Sex workers in Botswana, most of them migrants, received food donations from charities this week after reports the majority of them were facing starvation due to the coronavirus lockdown. A sex workers organization behind the initiative says it aims to help at least 800 migrant sex workers during the lockdown, especially those who are HIV positive or have young children. Kundise Dube reports from the capital, Habaruni.
More than 800 sex workers across Botswana will benefit from food hampers donated by non-governmental organizations this week. Two NGOs working with sex workers organization Sisonke are assisting with the handouts. Sex workers who are HIV positive and those with young children will be prioritized. Program manager Mandla Bule says the project aims to help migrant sex workers who do not have access to the government's coronavirus relief aid.
Our priority groups are sex workers, especially non-citizen sex workers, because under the Botswana social relief for COVID-19, only citizens are supported with food parcels. So we saw it fit that we target sex workers who are firstly HIV positive, to those with children, and who are foreigners.
Authorities in Botswana imposed a nationwide lockdown in March to stop the spread of the coronavirus. The country has recorded 24 cases of the virus and one death. Bule said restrictions in movement due to the lockdown have meant sex workers cannot meet their clients.
Sex workers are mostly affected because right now their work is mostly dependent on the movement of people. So under lockdown, there's no people, nobody's allowed to go anywhere. So in turn, they have lost on income.
Sex work remains illegal in Botswana, but an estimated 7,000 locals and migrants are involved in the trade. Botswana has begun easing its lockdown restrictions and full activities are expected to resume after May 21st. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Habaruni.
Rice plays a huge role in diets in Ghana, from the famous West African jollof rice to rice and stew. But most of these grains are imported. In 2019, Ghana launched Eat Ghana Rice, a campaign aimed at supporting the local rice industry, but imports still dominate. COVID-19 has forced some Asian rice exporting nations to temporarily ban the export of the grain, which might prove a boon for local rice farmers. Stacey Knott reports from Accra.
Demand for local rice has been on the increase in Ghana as a result of last year's Eat Ghana Rice campaign. But in markets across the West African nation, imported brands still dominate. Rice industry insiders say locally grown grain may soon see a boost from an unexpected supporter, the coronavirus pandemic. With COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, some nations have temporarily banned exports of the grain to ensure food security. The Importers and Exporters Association of Ghana says the bans have sent imported rice prices soaring. Samson Asaki Owingabit is the association's executive secretary.
Even during the lockdown period, we saw that import rice has prices have gone high, and so it is affecting the Ghanaian consumers. Of course, the cost of rice have also gone up.
Owingabit says the high prices are making local rice more competitive, which could boost Ghana's rice production and food security. Rice experts say the average Ghanaian eats about 40 kilograms of rice per year, and Ghana's farmers meet about half the country's demand. Rice breeder Maxwell Dakwa Asante says the gap and supply disruptions from the coronavirus pandemic show why more investment is needed in local rice.
As science is driving the way we deal with this
pandemic. It should apply to crop scientists as well, where the government should begin to pay more attention to crop science and crops research, and especially rice, because we spend so much money importing rice.
Since 2017, Ghana has strengthened local food production through its Planting for Food and Jobs program. The program supplies subsidized rice seeds and fertilizer to Ghana's farmers to boost agriculture and food security. Ghanaian officials say the program is helping meet their target of boosting rice production to self-sufficiency by 2023. For the past decade, rice farmer Abena Abidi has worked with smallholder farmers to promote Ghana's rice. She supports their planting and then buys, processes, packages and markets the local grain.
The farmers have proven beyond reasonable doubt that they can produce in abundance. If we are able to develop more lowlands, we are able to rehabilitate the irrigation schemes we have available. If we are able to give stimulus package to value chain drivers, to rice value chain drivers, they'll be able to buy the surplus off the farmers immediately and pay them.
Abidi says a jump in demand for local rice after last year's Eat Ghana Rice campaign proves the market potential. While the coronavirus pandemic has been disruptive, she says she hopes the outbreak will inspire more support for rice farmers across Ghana as a buffer against food insecurity and a boost to the local industry. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra.
This past Monday, Senegalese President Macky Sall announced a sudden loosening of coronavirus restrictions, including a later curfew and especially the reopening of the mosques. Hadi Ba, a professor of cognitive sciences at the University of Dakar, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the reasons behind the president's decision and how it reflects poorly on Senegal's democracy.
I think it reflects the pressure of the religious leaders, because there is no medical basis to this easing of the restrictions. But we had these religious leaders asking to be authorized to pray at night, to have these devotions they perform during the Ramadan, and that is the reason, the principal reason for which he eased the restrictions.
Why do you think the religious leaders, not Macky Sall, because that's another thing, but why did the religious leaders pressure him to do this when medically perhaps it's not the safest thing for the population?
I think there are at least two reasons. First, the religious leaders are a power, like the state is a power. So they are trying to see, to test the strength of the state. And here they prevailed. So it's really a problem for our republic and for democracy. This is the first reason. The second reason for me is that Ramadan is one of the period in which during which religious leaders gain money, because it is a period of devotion. Okay, Ramadan is a period of sharing, during which the Muslims will go to mosque, give money to religious leaders and stuff like that. So if we don't have this kind of festive Ramadan, it is a period in which they will have less than they used to have during this month. So I think this economic preoccupation also played in the pressure they put.
And you mentioned that this power dynamic, this the ability to sway this decision is a problem for democracy and the people of Senegal. Can you expand upon that? You know, why is it a problem? Because also, I don't think it's just this one instance.
It is a problem because in Senegal, we have this, social contract in which religious leaders have influence on the populace, but they don't enter into the realms of the law. We have a secular state. So if we, and on problems of public health, those who are competent are the doctors. And if we give religious leaders the power to decide on problems of public health. It is a problem for the entire population.
That was Hadi Ba, professor of cognitive sciences at the University of Dakar. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. In Zambia, the former spokesperson for President Edgar Lungu says he feels vindicated after the chief prosecutor suddenly dropped an alleged corruption case against Amos Chanda and the former Road Transport and Safety Agency chief executive officer Zinda Basoko on allegations of embezzling $21,000.
The prosecutions, the state in this case, came to court and said that they made an allegation. It was actually one count, the two counts of corrupt practices. They came and said they would not be proceeding with the prosecution because there is no evidence at all. And therefore, they were asking the court to discharge me on those allegations. The whole event lasted 5 minutes, and the magistrate discharged us.
You and others had been accused. It was alleged that you were involved in some $21,000 corrupt practice. Was there any evidence at all against you?
The fact that the court discharged us and the prosecution themselves asked for a discharge, it does mean that there was absolutely no evidence at all in the allegation of $21,000 corrupt practices. I resigned from government for purely personal reasons because I wanted to go into the private sector. And 6 months later, very strange allegations were brought. I was arrested on November 15th. And I was given a court date on November 28, 2019. That did not happen. The first appearance was in January. First appearance, no witnesses came to speak against me. The second appearance, there was no witness that came. The third, the fourth, this is the fifth appearance. And therefore, it clearly shows that there was absolutely no evidence at all. There's no truth. I did absolutely nothing wrong. And therefore, I'm pleased that it does appear that the due process of the law took place and the court has discharged the matter.
How do you feel now, Amos?
I feel vindicated because all along I've maintained my innocence, and I think that that's what this court has affirmed today. And despite the inconvenience that has been caused to me and my family, and that is a due process of the law. We all must subject ourselves before the courts. And when the due process of the law has taken place, we must all accept the outcome, whether it is favorable or not.
Amos Chanda is the former spokesperson for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. And that's it for this Wednesday, May 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington saying, have a good day.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.